Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 6 of
Blue Mango Radio.
Oh, Christmas tree, oh, Christmas tree, how lovely are thy branches. Part 2 of my Christmas tree care extravaganza this week. I am beyond thrilled to have Joe Lample as my guest on the show today to discuss the magical possibility of actually turning the tradition of a cut Christmas tree into a potted living one. I think you advanced plant parents and eco-friendly plant parents are really going to flip for this episode. So, Joe Lample is the creator, host, and executive producer of the award-winning national PBS series, Growing a Greener World, and he's the founder of www.joegardener.com. He also has his own gardening podcast, which I highly recommend. It's really awesome, called The Joe Gardener Show. And in case you haven't caught him in any of those shows, maybe you see him in little skits like, I don't know, The Today Show, Good Morning America, or The Weather Channel. He's truly the real deal. When I first heard about the living Christmas tree trend, I was completely fascinated, so I took to the internet to find out more information. I came across this great blog post on living Christmas trees that Joe had written from 2008, and I knew that he needed to be my guest for this episode. He's the go-to guy for everything gardening and was so ahead of the curve on this trend. Just in case you're interested, I'll leave the link to that blog in the show notes for this episode, by the way. We're so lucky he's taken the time to share with us the ins and outs of live Christmas tree care and how it's completely doable for you city dwellers, as well as plant parents who are lucky enough to have some coveted outdoor space. I also personally just have a bunch of aha moments towards the end of the episode when we're discussing replanting our living Christmas trees outdoors and how learning to do that is actually going to completely inform how you treat your indoor houseplants. Anyway, Joe is just the most lovely and I'm so excited to share our convo with you today. I hope you enjoy it and happy holidays. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hi, Joe. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, Maria, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So excited to have you. I mean, what better expert than Joe Gardner for our Christmas tree episode?
Well, thank you. I'm honored. So I'm glad you think that way. Hopefully you'll feel that way at the end of the interview. But yeah, it's good to be here.
All right, so let's talk about living Christmas trees and what initially got you excited about the concept of living Christmas trees. I feel like it's relatively recent. You know, you wrote an article about them a while ago, so you've definitely been on the forefront of the trend. So can you talk to me a little bit about how you got into it and what interested you about them?
Yeah, well, first of all, let's just clarify what a living Christmas tree is. I mean,
yes,
there's
please.
Cut Christmas trees, which were living Christmas trees, and now they're cut. So technically they're not live anymore, but you're talking about the ones, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're talking about the ones that are literally after the season, you can plant them out somewhere. Is that right?
Yes. Like in a pot.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So we're on the same page there.
Yes.
So I would tell you to answer that question. I am a self-professed super tree hugger, tree lover. Everything about trees I love. And what I don't love 99% of the time is when, you know, they just get cut down or they get abused. And so to think about all these cut Christmas trees that are out there, and then I'm going to come back to this in a minute because there's a market for that. And we'll explain why that can make sense a lot too. But the lesser of two evils, I guess, would be if you're going to use a Christmas tree and you have an opportunity to use one that doesn't have to be cut down and then can be replanted after the season, well, that's the best of all because it just continues its life. And then you have something, you know, afterwards that you can think back on that particular tree and you might make that association to some special memory of that particular season when that tree was in the house to commemorate it. So anyway, maybe that's a long roundabout way of saying I just love trees so much. And then I realized that there's an application for them even in the house for a short period of time, but then they can go back out and be planted. And now you have a living tree, whether it's planted on your own property or even if you're maybe in an apartment or a condo or don't have a place to plant it on your own property, then you donate it to a park or a school or someplace else. But, you know, at least you get to give that tree a second life.
Right, totally. And yes, part one of my two-part Christmas tree extravaganza. We have Mary Jean Packer of the Christmas Tree Farmers Association of New York, who talks about how cut trees can be great for recycling into compost and reused. But you really can't do better with recycling than having a potted Christmas tree that you either get to use again or get to actually put it back in the earth, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. There's nothing better than that option. That is certainly at the very top of the list of options for Christmas trees.
And so we're going to get into the whole process of selecting and caring for a tree. Would I be right if I said that there were three options for what you do after? You could either replant it, you could keep it in the container outdoors, or is it possible to keep a tree indoors as well? Like once it adjusts to your house, could you keep a tree indoors year round, do you think?
Practically no. I'd say with great difficulty, maybe, but you'd be in the 1/10 of the 1% that could make that happen. Because you have to think about, you always have to go back, whether it's a tree or a plant or whatever, and you have to think about the conditions that it is that are indigenous to where that was growing in the natural environment. Mm-hmm. And for a conifer, for the most part, is what we're using for Christmas trees, it's not in your apartment or in a controlled environment where, you know, there's a climate controlled, whether it's heat or air at low humidity. And, you know, they just need more than what an indoor controlled environment that a homeowner or a condo or an apartment dweller is going to be able to provide it. And it's too hard to replicate that in our lives to make that tree happy long enough to where it's really going to be worth the trouble.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I just walked myself through that too. And, you know, mostly on this podcast, we talk about houseplants, but most houseplants are tropical. So mm-hmm. It's easier to replicate a tropical houseplant's normal life, you know, with moisture in an apartment. But a tree, an evergreen that's like, or a pine that's used to, or a conifer that's used to like living in snow and ultimate freezing temperatures, of
right.
course, that's going to be very difficult to replicate year round in an apartment or a house.
Yes. And houseplants are much more forgiving. They're herbaceous. They're not typically woody or ever mm-hmm. woody.
Totally.
And when you get into woody plant material, it becomes much trickier to provide that environment indoors, whereas a typical houseplant that we would normally have in our house. So you can, if it starts looking bad, you can cut that out, or you can stick it in the bathtub right. with the shower curtain closed and give it more humidity and things. You can, it just, they're just much more forgiving mm-hmm. than a woody plant of any type. So
yeah. I'm just in a place in my life where I want to make everything a houseplant. So I have to ask, because I want it in my apartment. But anyway, for those of us who do want to have a potted Christmas tree in our apartment, mm-hmm. can you walk us through what does the entire process look
yeah.
like? So from going to the nursery and what we should be looking at, you know, in selecting a tree, to the care before, you know, we get it inside, to how long we keep it inside, the whole
yeah.
the whole process.
Sure. Well, if you have the ability to begin with the end in mind, like what I would think, what are you going to do with that tree after the season? Because it deserves a life after the season. I mean, the reason you're buying a living Christmas tree is hopefully to, you know, perpetuate its life. But so you're thinking about where potentially that tree is going to go after the season is over. And then you want to make sure that you're buying. And if that's the case, then by all means, you want to buy a species or variety of tree that is indigenous to your area, wherever it's going to be planted afterwards. Because a lot of these living Christmas trees that we find at the nurseries or garden centers aren't from around here. So even right. if you planted them out afterwards, because they're not from the area that you live in, they're probably not going to do well outside either. So it's important that you select a variety or a type of conifer that is going to survive outside in the environment wherever you live. You're looking for choices of trees that are from that area. That gives them the best chance of survival. So that's the first thing. Now, if you're really not thinking beyond that tree having a life after Christmas, then, you know, that part doesn't matter. You buy what you want and what you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so now we're at the garden center, we're at the nursery, we're looking at, you know, our options of certainly the budget is going to play into what we can afford. But the other thing is, once you buy it, even though it may be, you know, this is, here we are, you know, right after Thanksgiving. And so we've got more than a month before Christmas, and we buy that potted future Christmas tree now. Well, what do we do with it now? Are we going to bring it into the house now in that climate controlled environment where it's warmer and it's drier than maybe that tree prefers? And is that a good idea? Well, probably not, because right. that tree needs as much time outside before it's inside that is possible. And then once the season is over, once the holiday is over, it needs to get back outside. So all that to say is, the less time indoors, the better chance of survival and health of that living Christmas tree. Now that's kind of sad, because the whole idea of the season of Christmas is not, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 days. It's kind of like leading into it from
right.
Thanksgiving. So you want the decorations. And of course the Christmas tree is the centerpiece of that. And with a living Christmas tree, if that is the centerpiece, well, that's kind of a double-edged sword, because, like, for the reasons I just said, bringing it in now and expecting it to look great on Christmas Day,
right.
you got to be Houdini to make that happen.
What would the max amount of days to have the tree inside be, would you say?
I'd say it's going to maybe 2 weeks on the far end. I really.
Oh, okay.
Again, that's being generous. I would say, you know, a week is better. A few days is best. So I guess it depends on the care while it's in the house and then the aftercare. But the greater stress it goes into while it's inside, the harder the recovery time. Because no matter when you buy a living plant and you take it from its container and put it into the ground, wherever that environment is, they can experience a level of transplant shock. And when I say they, I'm talking about any type of shrub or tree, not just Christmas trees. And
right.
so there is a level of stress that's involved once you put that, whatever that living potted plant is, into the ground. So even in the best conditions, if you went straight from the nursery to the ground, you have the risk of a little bit of shock and some establishment time, which requires your attention. So if you have given it more of a stressful period leading up to that by having it inside longer than necessary, you know, you've got a few extra challenges ahead of you to promote its life and to get it established once it's in the ground.
Right.
So the less time, the better indoors.
Okay. And so people need to really plan a transitional period before and after the indoors, and plan, you know, if you're in New York, you know, if you live in an apartment, that probably looks like
getting the tree pretty close to when you want to bring it indoors and bringing it indoors and kind of praying for the best if you don't have some place to keep it outside. But if you do have a patio or if you do have a lawn, you know, preparing that few days before and after to kind of slowly transition the plant so it won't have as much shock.
That is absolutely correct. And then on the day of Christmas or the day after, as soon as possible after you feel like you can say goodbye to it, you want to get it to its final home, you know, where you can get it planted and back outside. But when it's inside, that's another important part. You want to make sure that it does stay away from direct heat or direct air, especially heat. You know, that's definitely going to dry it out or desiccate it. And you have to make sure that you keep it watered, but not too wet. You know, you always want soil to be moist, but not soggy or saturated. And indoor climate controlled environments are natural dehumidifiers. And of course, heat tends to dry out much quicker. So that's all the more reason why you have to pay attention to that. Now, you can buy those anti-desiccation sprays that you can put on conifers or plants,
right,
to help hold that moisture in, and they actually do work. So if you want to give yourself a little advantage or a little extra help when you bring that in or before you bring it in, which is when you need to apply it, that wouldn't be a bad choice.
And that's a spray that you spray before the tree comes inside, and it helps preserve the moisture that it had when it was outdoors, right?
Right, right. It kind of keeps it from transpiring or sweating. And so whatever moisture is there, it holds the moisture in, above ground. And that's, you know, that's critically important because that's one of the biggest, factors to the stress of a tree once it's moved inside is that drying out part. And you'll know that because they'll start to drop their leaves or their needles.
Right. And I'm very curious. I've never heard about the anti-desiccant, anti-wilt sprays. Can you spray, is it helpful to spray those on a cut tree as well? Because cut trees deal with loss of water too, or really just living?
You know, potted. I'm thinking out loud about that. It probably does help. In fact, I bet some of these cut tree places do that, like those flocked trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's probably some anti-desiccant in that as well to help make sure that those needles stay on there longer. But as long as water is being drawn up, well, actually, maybe not even that condition. I'd say whatever moisture is in that tree when you get it home, you can reduce the transpiration that takes place by spraying it, I guess, kind of sealing in the moisture, I guess, is what you're doing, even with a cut tree. So right. That's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that before. I've never done it to a cut tree.
That would be a good experiment. I might experiment with that this year.
Well, you know, you kind of have to have, I always think in an experiment like that, you need to have kind of a controlled test where you have two examples. One where you're spraying the anti-desiccant, and another one, you know, a kind of a replication of the same thing. So you're buying two of the exact same things, and one you don't spray. And that's when you really get, you can tell the results is when you have a comparison, you know, an A and a B.
So I guess you're telling me I need two Christmas trees this year. In my little one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, right. To do the experiment the right way, you need that control,
which is the
one that's untreated and the other one. But, I hope somebody out there listening tries that and then they lets us know, because I won't be doing that this year, but I would love to know if anybody does. It would be interesting.
I love that. That's really interesting. So once you've selected the tree, you've sprayed the tree, you've brought it indoors, you're going to make sure to keep it away from heat or light. Do you have an opinion on like lights, Christmas tree lights? Like they're supposed to be the low.
Like the LEDs, the low
heat. Yeah, the LED ones.
Yeah. I mean, can you even get the non-LEDs anymore?
I guess that's
the industry standard. But I would say for sure the LEDs, because first of all, they're safer. Energy consumption is next to nothing, and they're not going to create the heat that can be a big problem to trees, whether they're cut or not.
Right.
You don't want to add extra heat. But back to so when you were talking about keeping it away from light, were you talking about sunlight or light as in heat from the bulbs?
Maybe direct sunlight.
Yeah. But probably direct sunlight, if it's like if you have insulated windows, it would be good to have it in direct light because the sun would be a good thing for it, but you don't want it baking. So insulated windows would give you the best of both worlds, and it would give you the light that it can benefit from without the heat of the baking.
Right. Oh, okay. And you know what? Mary Jean was talking about with a cut tree, you don't want it in direct light because the direct light is essentially just going to, since the tree is cut, it's just going to dry the tree out. So with a cut tree, you want it out of direct sunlight. But of course, with a potted tree, since it's still living, it wants sunlight because it should be in the sunlight.
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh my God. We're learning so many things. So it's very exciting.
Right. Good.
Okay, cool. Any other best practices for when the tree is indoors before we transition after Christmas?
Well, I mentioned, making sure you're monitoring the moisture level in the soil. That's a big one, because if it dries out inside, that's almost a kiss of death. Once it dries out, it's hard to kind of rehydrate it sometimes. But one little extra trick there is to add some mulch, even inside. And mulch can be, you can buy some pretty sphagnum moss at the place probably that you bought the living tree. And just place that on top. But what that is, it's kind of like an insulating barrier. Think of it like a blanket or something. But it helps keep that moisture that's in the soil from evaporating out. The more that you can keep moisture in the soil, the better chances those roots obviously have of getting that hydration as needed. But when it leaves the soil, it's gone. And if you've missed an opportunity to keep it evenly moist, that's when it starts to go into decline as well. So that little extra layer of mulch, whatever you use for that, is a good thing.
So just to clarify, mulch is something that you use to put on top of whatever soil you have to keep moisture in.
That's one of the reasons for mulch. Mulch has a million reasons. It's like the aspirin when you feel bad. It takes care of so many issues. But on this conversation around retaining mulch in the soil, mulch is the best thing to do that. It's that insulating blanket.
Okay, awesome. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Hot take, plant friends, there is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully.
After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
And you mentioned the sphagnum moss, which I think a lot of us have seen for orchids and other things. What is mulch normally made up of? Is it moss or?
There's no normally made up of. Mulch is just organic matter of any substance that will break down on its own, that will decompose or biodegrade on its own. But in the state that you use it as mulch, it's more of a intact. Like, let's think of shredded bark. Let's think of ground up leaves. Let's think of straw. All of those things, anything that's organic that eventually will biodegrade on its own, can be considered mulch. In fact, some people would tell you that rocks are mulch, ground up tires are mulch, and technically they are. They're not organic matter, especially at least the tires, but they do provide that insulating layer to hold moisture in. So that's why it's considered a type of mulch. But my definition of mulch excludes inorganic material.
Gotcha. All right, cool. So it's a wider definition than I was accustomed to. Thank you for clarifying. I feel like that's going to be helpful for any plant, regardless of Christmas tree or not.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in mulch. We should be using it everywhere.
Yes. All right, cool. So we've had a beautiful Christmas with our beautiful living tree, and now comes the time to transition out. What are best practices with that?
Okay. So I mentioned earlier on, figure out where you're going to plant this tree before you move it there, and then move it there as fast as possible to get it back out into the outdoor environment. But one tip, at least for certain parts of the country, by the time after Christmas rolls around, you know, the ground may be frozen and then it becomes harder to dig that hole. So if you have the foresight and the time and the energy to dig the hole ahead of time, it's a great idea, so that then you could just come and it saves time. It's a benefit that pays back, because when you go to plant it physically, the hole is already dug. So right. You're not dreading it, right? You know, it's like, totally. Okay, I just go pop it in the ground.
Right.
But when you do that, there's a couple techniques that you need to make sure that you do when you're planting it. And one is to make the hole large enough. And when I say large enough, really I'm talking about wide enough. You never want a hole to be deeper than how that tree is going to sit into the ground relative to how it was in the container. And I'll even clarify even more than that, because it's more of this. When you plant any tree or shrub, but we're talking about live Christmas trees, you want to put it in the ground so that when you put your fingers down the trunk and you find that point at the base of the trunk where the flare or where the roots begin, even on a small little potted tree, at some point, you know, where that the base of the trunk meets the roots, that's the level that it needs to be in the ground when you plant it back outside, or even slightly higher.
Oh, okay. Right.
If you were to take that tree and plant it deeper than the surrounding grade, well, that's another really high risk factor for killing that tree, because when it rains or when you water it, because it's now sitting deeper, kind of more in a bowl configuration, water is going to go towards the roots, which sounds okay, but too much water pooled around those roots can cause it to drown. And you want to avoid that.
Yeah. And if it's covered in snow, which is probably constantly kind of melting and seeping through the soil, that's going to be a real issue.
Well, especially if you get, you know, those fluctuations where it melts quickly and then you get more and then that melts.
Right.
And then, yeah, that accumulation of water. That's a terrible. In fact, here's a bit of trivia for you. Far more houseplants and trees and plants in general die from overwatering than underwatering. And so going back to how you dig the hole, planting it too deeply or digging a hole too deeply is super bad. So plant it no deeper than it was sitting in the container. Really, I want to clarify that, because sometimes in the container, it's already planted too deep when the people at the nursery repotted it up and then they planted it too deep. And if you're thinking that soil level is the right level, well, that may already be too deep. They may have added soil on top of the roots when they moved it from one pot to the next. Am I making sense so far?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
I can go back. I was going to say, I don't mean to belabor this, but it really is that important. It's probably the most important thing you can do when you're replanting a tree is simply to make sure that find those roots at the soil level of where it was in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Those roots may be right there, or they may be deeper than that because the people at the nursery or the store or wherever added more soil just
right.
to dress it up or whatever. Well, so now the roots are even deeper. And
so you have to know better.
You have to know, but it's not hard. You just feel for where those roots are. Just,
right.
you know, just ease your fingers across the top until you find those roots. That's where you want the top of the root ball to be when you plant it. So just suffice it to say that.
That's
and even
so
slightly
helpful.
Higher. And yeah. even slightly higher. For me, I'm actually planting a bit higher and then I'm adding mulch. You know, this thing we just talked about.
Right.
Over those roots. And so when we're watering or when it's raining and the water gets to those roots, and they will, the water is still kind of rolling off the side and away from it. So the water is not pooling in that hole that you just planted. And so therefore you really cut down on that risk of it drowning. And again, you want to avoid that at all costs. And so by planting at soil level or root level or slightly higher, you really give that tree a much better chance of survival.
I love what you just said, because I feel like, you know, I'm coming from the apartment houseplant world where, you know, I don't have a lot of interaction with like planting trees in, you know, soil
yeah.
outdoors.
Yeah.
But what you just said is exactly, I think, how people need to think about when they repot their houseplants as well. Because it's all about root care. It's all about whether or not you set the roots of your plant up to thrive and be able to absorb what they need to or rot. You know, like that's why I know that's why so many people kill succulents, because they don't have properly draining soil and, you know, or drainage holes in their pots, and their succulents die from root rot. That's like the main cause.
Exactly.
You know, with houseplants, it's like you're replicating nature, but sometimes you forget when you're just like totally obsessed with your houseplants and you forget that these principles come from outdoors, you know?
Well, and that's the case with everything living, every
totally.
Plant that's living. You're just trying to think about replicating its natural environment. If you want something to survive or thrive, just try to replicate as best you can its natural environment. And then back to this planting thing, the other really important thing, there's several things, but
mm-hmm.
the first one we talked about, planting a hole, digging a hole so that it's about at least two times wider, three times is better, but never deeper. Okay. So width much, you know, 2 to 3 times wider, but never deeper. So that's the first thing. And then when you take that tree out of its pot, here's the other thing I need everybody to do is look at the roots. A lot of times that tree was living in that pot for way too long. And because there was no place for those roots to grow and expand, what do? They just keep circulating inside of the,
right.
the wall of the pot.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates this condition called, you know, root bound or pot bound, and the roots really are girdling itself. It's basically if you did not break that cycle when you replanted it, and the way you break the cycle is whether you do it with your fingers and you tease those roots apart, and just literally you're not going to hurt them. You're going to break them apart. You're going to pull them apart like a big tangled blob. You want to just create an environment or an opportunity for those roots to now have a way to grow out rather than continue to cycle the
right.
way they've been growing. And that's another thing, because even if you create the best planting hole, and it's wide enough and it's just the right depth, if you don't do something to break up that root pattern, then you've done nothing, because the roots are not going to be equipped to take in new moisture and new nutrients from around the soil because they can't get to it. They're all bound up together. Mm-hmm. So whether you cut it, slice it, tease it with your fingers, shake out all that soil and start from scratch with this nice loose mound of roots underground, and then backfill with the soil that you just took out of the hole and watered in so that the water is taking the soil and it's filling in every possible void around the roots. Because the other kiss of death is if roots aren't in contact, direct contact with soil, well, they can starve themselves because they need that contact. They need that ability to receive nutrients and moisture. But air next to roots is, unless it's a plant that, you know, an air plant, for example, it's got to have soil and moisture.
Right,
around
moisture.
It, right? Yeah. So that's the other thing. Watered in, backfill with a native soil or good quality soil, and tease those roots.
And tease those roots. All things you should be doing with houseplants too, even just when you're repotting. This
Go
is
figure.
Great.
Go figure.
Go figure, right? Yeah. I love it. That's awesome. And the hole should be how much larger than the root ball?
At least two times wider.
Right. Okay, cool.
At least.
You got to give it room to
better.
Breathe and
yeah,
grow.
Yeah, three is better. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And do you need any transition time out of the apartment, out of the house, or really just get it outdoors and get it in the hole so it can really start adjusting?
Well, some people would say, you know, give it some transition time. But if it's not, I would say I would prefer, and I've had better results getting it into the ground as soon as possible, because a plant, what I just said, you know, you're always trying to replicate its natural
right.
growing environment. Well, the natural growing environment is never in a pot, right? It's in mm-hmm. the ground. So the sooner you can get it into the ground, assuming that you've provided the right conditions, the things that we just talked about, and then mulch on top to help retain moisture, I would do that as soon as possible.
Okay, totally. Anything else regarding getting the tree in the ground and making sure that it does well before you move on?
Once you plant it in the ground, don't assume that it's going to get its own water. It just, if like, even if it's covered in snow and the snow isn't melting, it's not getting, you know, sufficient water. It's really critical that for plants and trees to establish that they get watered properly until they're established. And that even means through wintertime. So it's not that you have to go back out there and water all the time, but you just want to make sure that you're giving it a chance to get the water it needs until those roots can get out and find it on their own.
And, you know, just for the listeners that are in apartments, like myself, I'm listening to this and I'm jealous because I'm like, oh, I wish I had a piece of land that I could go, you know, repot a tree. But there's always a local garden. There's always a local community center or something that it takes a very quick Google search just to type in, you know, what are my local garden centers or community gardens that I can donate this tree to and arrange that. So just because you're in an apartment, don't feel like you can't still do this and have this experience, or at least give your tree to someone who knows how to care for it and replant it and keep the circle of life going.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea. And one more thing I would also offer, even if you've never done it yourself, I mean, just follow what I just said and you can do this, but I would offer to plant it myself, because you never know, as much as they want that tree, it's just one more thing they've got to do on their list of things to do.
Right.
And this, you know, everybody's busy all the time. And so, you know, who knows if that tree is really going to get planted in time. And the sooner, as I just said, the sooner you get it in the ground, the better. And the fun thing is, if you donate that tree and you happen to come upon that tree, you know, the next year, 5 years, 10 years later, how cool is it to walk by that tree and know that's the one you donated and planted in that setting? Plus, you ensured its survival, or at least did a better chance of assuring its survival, because you were the one that got it in the ground and didn't leave that to chance or somebody else's schedule.
Yeah, I love it. Take the initiative to get dirty, man. Like, especially if you're living in a city, that's something you rarely get to do. So take the initiative, figure out where you're going to plant it and go do it. And then bring all your friends to see your tree.
Yeah,
that lives on forever. I mean, the tree can certainly kind of become an heirloom of sorts. And you can bring friends, you can bring your children in the future to go visit that and know that that tree is helping enrich the air and, you know, whatever community you donate it to. That's a pretty special thing.
And maybe that becomes its own tradition, because maybe next year you do the same thing next to that other tree and you start a little urban forest. Who knows?
A little urban forest. I love it. That's the spirit of Christmas.
Right.
I love that. What a beautiful note to end off on. All right, Joe, thank you so much for being on the show. For anyone who wants to get to know you a little bit better, because you actually have 3 podcasts about gardening and a TV show where we can watch you do what you do best outdoors, please let us know where we can find you.
Well, I would say the single place where everything lives these days is joegardener.com. And I'm going to spell it. I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence, but too many people leave the one extra E out that's so important. So it's just joegardener.com, joegardener.com. There you can get the podcast. I mean, I have a podcast called The Joe Gardner Show that's with a tagline, grow like a pro and no experience required. And that's really, you know, for the people that maybe are transitioning more to outside. I think, Maria, your specialty certainly is the indoors, and I'm going to be listening to more of your podcast than that. But if they're trying to get some more outside growing information and they don't want to be overwhelmed or intimidated, I think
people get a little outdoor space in their apartments when they upgrade.
There you go. Right. And so that would be the place to go. And then the television show that I do on PBS, it's a national show on PBS called Growing a Greener World, has its own website, growingagreenerworld.com. And those other podcasts that you mentioned were from, you know, several years back when I was doing podcast shows related to the television episodes. But as you know, Maria, it's a very time-consuming labor of love to create a nice podcast episode. Mm-hmm. Now all my focus is in the Joe Gardner Show podcast, but I love it.
Which is amazing. Everyone go subscribe to it.
Thank you. Yeah. And then social, it's just at Joe Gardner pretty much everywhere. Just go there and you'll find me.
Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.